So today, although it's not the end of the series, it is the end of a season of talking about the Sermon on the Mount. 8 weeks it's taken us to get through the Sermon on the Mount, these three chapters of Jesus' teaching, his spiritual, practical, ethical teaching. It's taken us 8 Sundays to get through, and that's with leaving a lot of stuff out. It could have taken far longer than that. And yet I was reflecting that if you just stood up and read the three chapters of the Sermon on the Mount out loud, that would probably take less time than most sermons, even Uniting Church sermons, which tend to be towards the shorter end. And for a preacher, that's a kind of sobering thought. I mean, what, one has to ask, are we playing at? When we seem to use so many words to say so much less than Jesus said in so few. But then he was Jesus, so we maybe don't have to feel all that bad about it. But anyway, we come today to the end of the Sermon on the Mount. And it finishes with a challenge and then with three warnings. Actually, it's the same warning three times, just to really make sure that we get the point. But first of all, the challenge. The gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction. There are many who take it. The gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life. There are few who find it. Now, in our household, it's not entirely unknown when we're watching some Netflix thing that we're binging, for someone, normally Sveger, to shout at the television, how could they be so stupid? As you see a character making a decision, going down a route which has been clearly signposted as bad things are going to happen this way, disaster in this direction. I think we know that there are people who live lives like that, who take decisions to the horror and despair of onlookers, of friends and family, which are so obviously leading them towards destruction, towards bad outcomes in health or relationships or whatever. We all know that there are people like that, and that there are people who do exactly the opposite, who seem to have the wisdom and grace to make decisions which lead them towards abundance of life for themselves and for those around them. But if there are some who we would look at and say that they are taking a road which leads to destruction, would we say many? Would we say most? Isn't, in fact, the evidence of Sveker's frustration that seems odd, it seems wrong, it seems the exception to choose the path that leads towards destruction? But Jesus has it that way round. Many choose that path, that's the wide and easy path, and few find and walk the path that leads to real life. Now, in many Christian circles, these words are then heard as speaking about people's eternal fate, saying that it actually doesn't matter whether you're living a good life, it doesn't matter how good a person you are, if you haven't made the right commitment or believed the right thing or prayed the right prayer or been baptized in the right way or condemned the right people, whatever it is in your particular niche of Christianity, then you're doomed to destruction because you have not walked the narrow path. But I'd like to suggest that there's nothing in the Sermon on the Mount to suggest that Jesus is talking about a future life. Nothing to suggest that he's speaking of life and destruction after death. The whole of the Sermon on the Mount is very practical and very much focused on life here and now. So we do see that there are people who make self-destructive choices and others who seem to make good choices. But the ratios seem wrong. Jesus doesn't say that there will be a few who will follow a path to destruction and many who will lead basically pretty good lives. He turns it around. And there might be a bit of hyperbole about those words, but I don't want to dismiss them with that. Because actually I think there is a bite to them. I think there is a challenge to them. And it's a challenge we've actually heard several times as we've gone through the Sermon on the Mount. The challenge that says that the life that Jesus is talking about, the life that we as followers of Jesus are called to live, the path that we are called to walk, is not just the good life. It is not just living what used to be called Christian values. It is something radically more than that. C.S. Lewis wrote in the painfully dated now language of his day that we already have a word for a man who lives an upright, honourable, and honest life, and that word is not Christian, it is gentleman. The word Christian must mean more than someone who lives up to the standards of the day. Dated language, I don't think we would use gentleman in that sense very often. Now, at least I wouldn't. But the point stands. The calling that we have as followers of Jesus, the claim that Jesus puts on our lives, the road that he calls us to follow, is something much more challenging and radical than that, than just being good. That, for me, is the real bite throughout the Sermon on the Mount. That we are called to more. Because we're called to make known, to make visible the character of God, the grace of God, the welcome, the inclusion of God. And so Jesus said earlier on, if you love those who love you, if you look after those who look after you, if you forgive those who have forgiven you, you are doing no more than might be expected of a good person. Even the Gentiles do that, he said. Even tax collectors do that. And there might be those, there are indeed those who don't live up to that standard, but we're not called to compare ourselves with the worst. We're not challenged by Jesus' words to be better than people who are really going the wrong way. The call is to find and walk the narrow path that most people don't. The road which makes God known. The road of loving people who are painful and annoying and embarrassing. The road of caring for those who most need care, wherever they come from and however hard they are to care for. The road of taking those painful steps to forgive and to seek reconciliation where we can, even those that we might rather remain estranged from. The road of coming down from the moral high ground when we have been wronged and being willing to enter into reconciliation. The road of welcoming those that others would say we should condemn. And the road with it all of accepting the unjust criticism we get for walking that very road. Being more, being people who actually make known the character of God. And then in the light of that challenge, the teaching in the Sermon on the Mount ends with these three paragraphs, which really should put to bed once and for all any form of Christian teaching which says the core of faith is believing or saying the right things. You will know them by their fruits. And then, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. And then, of course, the wise man who builds his house upon the rock. I wonder how many times you've heard that final parable told, with the punchline being, build your life on the rock that is Jesus. You might well know the children's song, The Wise Man Built His House Upon the Rock. It makes its final verse, so build your house on the Lord Jesus Christ. Which is probably good advice, although maybe in a children's song when people have a developmental stage where they take things quite literally, build your house on Jesus Christ may be problematic. But I hope that we can see past that and see what it's actually saying. But it's actually not what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. Everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like the wise man who built his house on rock. Everyone who hears these words and does not act on them will be the foolish man who builds on sand. Right at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, wrapping it up, Jesus' words are not about what you believe, what you say, what you pray, what church you go to, but whether, when you hear the words of Jesus, when you hear the radical revolutionary call of the words of Jesus, you do something about them. The one who builds on the rock is the one who hears Jesus saying, love your enemies and do good to those who curse you, and asks themselves, well, who is my enemy? And what could I do which would be an act of love towards them? Or here's forgive others as you have forgiven and asks, who is it that I'm holding a grudge against? What steps could I take to begin that process of letting go? Or perhaps here's love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your strength and asks, what am I holding back? What is it that's more important to me than God? Or maybe hears Jesus say how hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven and asks, what could I do with the wealth of whatever form that God has entrusted me with for the work of God? Or hears Jesus say, whatever you did for the least of one of these, you did for me. And asks, what could I do today, this week, this year? What could I do for those in my community, in my country, in my world, who are most in need? And the one who builds on the sand hears all those same words, because the parable doesn't compare those who hear with those who don't hear, but those who hear and act with those who hear and don't act. The one who builds on the sand hears all the same words, but chooses not. Chooses that right now, at this stage of my life, what Jesus is calling for isn't practical. who hears and chooses to hold on to what they have rather than opening their hands with gratitude and generosity. The narrow path is found and walked by few. Because it's much harder to dig foundations on rock than in sand, or at least I would imagine it would be. It's not something I have great personal experience with. It's much easier, to take one of Jesus' other analogies, to grow weeds than it is to grow fruit. That one I can attest to from personal experience. It's much easier to hear Jesus' words and agree with them and affirm them and even preach them than it is to act on them. But that is not the way to life, the narrow road. That is not the way to live, the life in all its fullness, the life that makes God known. It is the hard path to walk. G.K. Chesterton put it like this: Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found hard and not tried.